What's up, party people? It's your girl, DL Hayes, coming back to you from the land of the rising sun. This is the one and only Dark Cloud Podcast, here to let you know that every dark cloud has a silver lining. Welcome to episode 10,
Habarigani.
Finally,
the long-awaited episode 10 is here,
and I am back with Apollo, and we are here to play catch up. So, what's up?
Not much. I mean, it's been a little while, so there's a lot of things that have happened since the last time that we spoke to you guys. So we're anxious and ready to share. It's been exciting. Mm-hmm.
It's definitely been a while. The last episode we recorded was in October. Ooh, that's tough.
Yeah,
that's tough.
A little bit.
But you know, life is what it is, and we're busy people, super busy. So
very.
Yeah, so I'll kick it off. You know, kind of let the folks know what's going on with you. Basically, I mean, it's been life, like just working and coaching, trying to find a balance, and you know.
Yeah, to put it very simply in the way most folks will understand, we go from having no kids of our own to 10 with basketball and what?
You forget, you completely skip volleyball.
Oh gosh.
How many? It's about 10 too.
Yeah. I mean, just
depends.
We instantly gain double digits of kids, you know, per season.
Right.
And that, I mean, they're literally like your kids.
They are. Especially, I think it has a lot to do with the type of person you are. We don't have kids of our own yet. And I teach. So that's 300 some kids right there that I have throughout the week, and then I go straight from my job to coaching in the afternoon. So it can be pretty intense, and it's a pretty crazy hectic schedule, because with coaching you have practices, you have games, meets, fundraising meetings, anything you can think of, we have it. So it was kind of tough this year, though, because I've coached 3 sports
back
in
to
a
back.
Row.
To back.
Yeah, I don't know what kind of crazy person I am, but I think we're definitely the definition of true sports fanatics, because it doesn't just stop with, like, oh, being a fan and watching it on TV, which, sidebar, you know, it took me a long time to figure out that fan was short for
fanatic.
Not like just recently or anything like that, but like it did take me a long time to realize that. But anyways,
we both from South Carolina, so I can't say it's a South Carolina. I can't say it's a South Carolina education.
Anyways, I have a very great South Carolina education. Thank you very much. Speaking of which, why they can't pay these people?
Man, look, it don't make no sense.
No sense at all.
They need to be paying these teachers.
I know.
Teachers need to be making a minimum of 100 grand a year.
Yes, to 100 grand a year for teachers.
A minimum of 100 grand a year. You got to think, they have y'all kids for 9 months out of the year. That's how long it takes to make a child, first and foremost. And anywhere from 7 to 8 hours out of the day. Now, let's just say all these kids are getting 8 hours of sleep. That means that parents only see their kids for 8 hours out of the day.
To 8 hours out of
you got to think, somebody else is having your kids the other 50% of their awake time.
It's true. So true. I wonder what it would equate to if we got paid like how daycares get paid per child.
Oh, man. Y'all making like $136,000. Like, and I'm all about that.
Like
run us that bread.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Give us that back pay, too.
But if you think about it, why is it not set up like that? I mean, I know it's salary-based, but we should get paid per child?
Because if y'all got paid what y'all was actually worth, people will actually be doing a much more consistent quality job. Not to say that teachers don't do quality work, but people will strive to do more because in most jobs, performance equals pay. So the better that you do, the higher your pay is.
But then there comes the issue of testing, because that's a big issue too, because, okay, if you base it on performance, then it would be how many kids pass the standardized test. But kids are over-tested.
Absolutely. And I believe that, and I'm just going to say this and let it alone, because I'm not in education, but I feel as if education has become so much more about academia than it has become about intelligence. And as you take psychology courses and things like that, like I did in college, you learn that intelligence applies to so many different things, just not academia, not the reading, the writing, and arithmetic. It's so much more.
So much more.
It's so much more. I mean, I use my dad, for example, high school graduate, went into the Navy and retired from the Navy, but my dad's trade is carpentry. He was a master carpenter, and he would be able to walk into a room and look at a wall and tell you the dimensions. He could walk into a room and look at it and tell you if something was level or not. Just amazingly gifted to be able to tell you this is what you need and be able to calculate, compute things that other people need to write down, and just in his head, boom, he could list out materials that it would take to build a house that was this tall, this wide. And that takes a certain amount of intelligence that can't be taught or measured in school.
Yeah, right. And I think that's one of my biggest things. Like, a lot of what I do, I'm a physical educator, and aka PE teacher. But a lot of what I do, you know, people think PE is all fun and games like recess. Absolutely not. I teach so many different skills, and no matter what subject you teach, what grade you teach, we take on a lot of things that people may not really consider that we do. Like, sometimes I'm a mentor, I'm a mediator, I'm just a shoulder to cry on, or I have to diffuse a situation. And, you know, people kind of forget that even though they're small, they're young, children are still people. They still go through things, they still experience things, they want to understand things, they want to know things. So on any given day, I'm teaching life skills along with physical, cognitive, psychomotor, locomotor skills. So it just comes with a lot, and it can be very emotionally taxing. And I mean, just like adults, kids have bad days too. Even the most perfect child can have a bad day, you know? So you have to deal and maneuver with all of those things. For me, my forte is in the gym, because that's how my mind is wired. That's how I function. Like, I'm sure I could teach in the classroom, but I like to be active, moving, and doing things, and I need space. So classroom teaching is definitely a different ball game, but we all have our respect of place in the school, and it takes a lot to deal with kids, you know? And in the environment that I'm in, we're dealing with military and military-connected kids. So they go through sometimes a wide range of emotions because they may have a parent that's gone for X amount of time. And a lot of people are single parents, believe it or not. And so they have to leave their kid with someone else that's trusted or whatever the case may be. And kids have to deal with those things. Some of them have to deal with going through the changes of divorce or separation, any changes in their household. Sometimes kids don't want to move and come overseas, so they're dealing with that, adjusting to a completely new environment, a new country, a new place, and it can be a lot. You know, they come very stimulated sometimes or understimulated, and you just never really know what you're going to get. But in any environment, you just learn the student, learn how to work with them, etc. So that's just talking about the kids. We haven't even covered the adulting in the matter, you know, dealing with adults in the system. So you have meetings, you have collaboration, and just a lot of different things that, you know, you go through, which with any field, any job, I'm pretty sure it's the same, just a different subject matter, different content. But I love it. I absolutely love what I do. And it really, I know I say job just because that's like the word for it, but it doesn't, term. Yeah, it's a general term. It doesn't feel like a job. I never wake up like, oh my gosh, I hate this. I don't want to do it anymore. Now I do wake up like, dang, I don't want to be up. I'm not ready to be up at this time of morning because I'm not a morning person. But it's never like, oh my gosh, I just hate this and I don't want to do it anymore. So with me, I mean, anything that I do, I'm passionate about it and I want to give it my all and give it my best. So that has a lot to do with why I haven't been recording really, because trying to find that balance is, it can be difficult, you know, and we're going through life changes as well, because you've been here going on a year now.
Yep, in just a few days, I would have been here a year.
Yep, a year. So when you came here, I was coaching. I was in the middle end of track season last year. And so the difference is this go around, you've been here with me from beginning to end in each sport. So
yes, and so I've been chomping at the bits. Basketball season went very well. First year head coach.
Like, okay, I know you're jumping into basketball season, but you can't forget volleyball
season. Well, we left off with volleyball season.
Did we?
Yep.
But did we talk in depth about volleyball season, though?
I don't know.
I don't know either. But volleyball season, so we start school a little later. We start like August 29th is the official start day of school. And so by the middle of September, I think that's when volleyball season actually started. So from the middle of September up until now, and it's still currently track season, we still have some time left in that. I've been coaching. And so you can go ahead and proceed, my bad.
Okay, so we'll go back to volleyball season. Well, you guys had what, a 15 and 2? 15?
I think we were like 16 and 2.
16 and 2 season. I just believe that the reason why it's been hard to record is because you do put a lot of time into the kids, dealing with them, not only in the sport, but outside of it. And there's been a lot of mental correction and not settling for mediocrity. So having to calibrate them to a high level, high standard, has been tasking.
Yeah, it's really, I'm a different type of coach because of the coaches that I've had, the upbringing that I had, the teaching that I had. So I'm pretty much intense.
She's like the female Bobby Knight, but she don't throw chairs.
I don't throw chairs. I'm not physically
abusive.
I have my ways. I don't know. I guess for me, it's very deep and serious because I know what sports has done for me, and I know how my coaches have imparted on me and in my life, and I know the difference that it all can make. So trying to convey a mindset and implement a program that's about the athlete as a whole, like as an athlete, as a student, as a person, it can be difficult if that's not what they're used to. So kind of changing that can be interesting, it can be challenging, but it's just so gratifying, and that's why I really stick with it, because it's more than just a game, it's more than just a sport, it's more than just something to do, you know, your spare time. Is much more than that, and I think those life skills and things that I learned from sports, it really shaped me and refined me in a way that I want to pass on. You know, I still play sports, but to me the most important part is passing it on to the next generation.
Because knowledge is like currency. It does no one any good if you hold on to it for yourself. It only has value when it passes from one hand to the next. So giving it to the kids and allowing them to flourish and see what they do with it. I think it's been really, really great, been really, really fulfilling. The attention that's been paid to them all the way around, and, you know, I love and I support my wife in this. It shows in all areas. A 16-2 record in volleyball. I'm pretty sure team GPA was close to around a 3.5. Mm-hmm. In basketball. Like I said, chomping at the bits. First year coach. Brings home a championship. Yeah. The Far East Championship. The first one in school history. The Pac East Championship. Regular season record of...
I don't know what the regular season record was. I think, because it depends on how they do it, but I think it was like 16-1? No, 2. I think it was 16-2.
Well,
no, it couldn't have been 16-2. That's the volleyball record. I don't know.
Yeah, it was like 17-1. And if you include like tournament play, ended up being like 30-something-4 or 30-something.
Yeah, when you add all the...
Yeah, 30-something-5, but I mean, an amazing record-breaking season. She came into it with just 3-4 returners, maybe about 4-5 first time ever basketball players. Never
played.
Touched a basketball a day in their life. So that came with its own separate challenges. Of building up a team, teaching fundamentals, people that had never watched basketball before, so they didn't understand lingo, you know.
But the difference is they are solid, like coachable.
An amazing group of young ladies.
Yeah, like I was just really and truly blessed to have that group of young ladies to work with, especially, you know, first year coaching here, basketball here, and just, I don't know, it was an amazing process to watch from beginning to end. And I think that's kind of like what suckers me back into it, is because you get to see where they start and you go through that process, and it can be rough. You're trying to get people on board, trying to get people to show up. And then by the end, it's like, wow, this is what you really came together to do. And I tell people all the time, it's not how you start or where you start, it's how you finish and where you finish. Because just because you finish in, or you start just because you start behind doesn't mean that's where you'll end up or where you'll stay, unless you don't do anything to progress and work towards it. And so I kind of implemented a lot of things that helped me, a lot of things that I was taught, and just really showing them how to believe in themselves and how to have that confidence to go out there and do what it is that they've been practicing and working hard for and learning. So the biggest thing about it is confidence, man, really, when you have that, you know, mixed group like that, because it's easy to get wrapped up in, oh, well, I'm not as good as she is, or I haven't been playing as long. And my whole motto was the whole time was like, I don't care. None of that matters. If you listen, you put in the work, you will be better. You will come out on top. And I think they definitely put in that work, because they came out on top. And it's still surreal. Like, sometimes I'm like, dang, they really did it. And that was months ago. Like,
and the amount of empowerment that they took away from it, knowing that they can shape their own path in the face of adversity, close and far away, they were able to apply so much of what we gave them. And it was just the most beautiful thing ever, because at the end of the day, sports parallels life.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea is to make them equipped for life. There's so many lessons that you can learn from your parents, and parents do such a great job, but at a certain point, some things are given to them in a different way.
Mm-hmm.
Some people need baby peas that are smashed up in a little jar. Some people can eat regular peas. It's still peas. It's the exact same thing, but just in two different forms, and they take it, but it's given to them in a way that they can work with it. And what they did with it and what I believe that they're going to do with it is going to be amazing. I don't see any of these girls on this team ever doubting their ability if they come into something, whether they're all new to a job that's not in their field of expertise, whether it be setbacks or life challenges. You know, I don't see them struggling because they've had an experience where they've had to do it, and they've had the coaching and the people around them to help them with that mental tenacity and strength and endurance to be able to conquer and achieve whatever it is they set their mind to. One of the things that impressed me the most about the season, before every game, the girls will set their own goals. And it will be stats. Hey, we're not going to allow this many points. We're going to shut the team down. They're not going to score over this many. We're going to score this much. We're going to not have this many turnovers. And you know what? They went out and fought every game to do it. And I think that was a major part of their success. So being goal-driven, oriented young women, I think is going to help them. And the team is young.
Yeah, super young.
Very young. We only had one actual senior on the court.
One actual senior.
No. Three. I'm
it was
sorry.
Three, but the three. So we basically had three seniors that never played basketball before, and two of them ended up being key players, really, because the whole idea is you can't really have a team with six people, and that's what we started out with. We started out with six people because it's hard to practice. So in the beginning, we did a lot of the plays and drills and stuff like that to, you know, show them how it's done and to make it where they weren't really killing themselves, because you do a UCLA drill with six people, everybody's gonna die because it's no real break or rest time in between, you know, and stuff like that. So we would have other people come out and kind of help us out and play as well. So yeah, three of the girls were seniors, and I just emphasize and stress to them, bring to the table what you have, whatever that may be, bring that. And one girl was definitely a defensive player to the core, like just by nature.
Lockdown
defense. And I mean, I taught her the basics of what to do, and just by nature of who she is, like sweet as pie, you know, not very aggressive outwardly, but obviously there's something on the inside, you know, that allowed her to be a beast defensively. And it wasn't just about having bodies on the team, but quality and building them to be their best. So it was pretty amazing, and really showing them how to set standards and not settle and not be content. Like, it's just so much that went into it. And we did a lot of things outside of the court as well.
Basketball games.
Dinners. Yeah, just like all kind of stuff.
A lot of team building.
And just a really, really good group of girls. Just so goofy, you know. And I'm the type of person, I'll laugh with you, I'll play with you, goofy, you know, cut up. But when I'm serious, I'm serious. And when I mean business, I mean business. And, you know, it was just a really good balance. And, yeah, just, I don't know. I didn't even know what else to say about them. Like, it was definitely worthwhile. It was worth everything that we endured and everything we went through during the season, and just really getting to know them. Like, that was awesome too. Like, absolutely. Getting to know each individual person and, you know, how to deal with them, what you can say to them, what not to say to them, you know, how to handle them. And each person, you know, is their own person. So just trying to make sure you take care of them, because I'm this is how I am. If I'm for you, I'm for you, you know, and I want the best for you. I want to see you do your best, achieve your best, etc. And so I really poured a lot into them. And even when it was all said and done, We had this nice banquet at the end. You know, I just felt like, man, like, I could give him more. Like, what else can I do? I still felt like, you know, I could have done more, done better.
And even though, like we said earlier, we don't have kids of our own yet, my inner dad was unlocked. I realized this after I drove 12 hours one way across Japan to be at the game. I kind of became the team dad.
Yeah, basically. I mean, cause you, I mean, from wrapping ankles and wrists and all kind of stuff to ice to just being a defensive body on the court for me. I mean, definitely supportive. And it kicks in, I guess, some innate abilities that you really have, because you have to make spur-of-the-moment decisions, especially if someone gets hurt or sick or something like that. You go into instant, parent mode automatically. Is definitely crazy. But it was a fun ride. So I put a lot into coaching. It's a lot that goes into it off the court, after hours. I didn't think we would spend this long talking about it, but yeah, I don't broadcast it because I've said the whole season, it's not my record. You know, it's not my championship because I didn't actually go on the court and push the ball up and down the court, stop the ball, you know, do all these things. It's the girls that were able to transfer what I was saying to game mode. And I think that's what makes me confident about their future. Because, I mean, like I said the whole time, even though we practice it, I teach them, I coach them, that does not mean they will get on the court and do what it is we went over. And I think it's the same in life. Like, and I made the parallel the entire season. I know they're probably tired of me saying it, but it's life. You can teach your child everything. You can give your child everything under the sun, everything in the book. When they turn 18 and they're in this world on their own, that does not mean they will apply one single thing that you ever taught them. You know, like, it's no guarantees in it. You know what I mean? Like, it's really risky if you think about it, but it's no guarantee that they will listen and that they will carry on what you showed them, what you taught them. So the rubber really meets the road. I feel like that's a real Southern saying. But when the rubber really meets the road, what are they going to do? They're going to go back to that foundation. So when it came down to game time, I was nervous before every single game. Like, I don't care if we just won a game by 30 points. Like, I was nervous before every game because it was just no guarantees in it to me that they would go out there and do what it is, you know, we went over. And I know I had to gain 10 pounds because when I'm nervous, I want something sweet. So I would eat, before the game, I would eat a cheesecake, not a whole cheesecake, but a slice or two.
Clarify.
A slice or two of cheesecake because I would be that nervous. And it just, I don't know what sweets does for me, but it helps calm my nerves. So I'm like, oh my goodness, you know, how is this game going to go? And I have to be strong and be tough and be confident for them, because whatever vibe you give off, whatever you bring, however you react and respond, they feed off of that and they pick up on it. So even though I was nervous, I had to be all right, ladies, let's go out here and get it, et cetera, et cetera. And they set their goals. They, you know, started getting into that habit. And sometimes I would forget and they'd be like, oh, coach, no, we didn't set the goals. So I would, you know, have to be like, all right, what are we going to do? How many assists? How many rebounds? Stuff like that. So it's awesome. And this is why I love this stuff, man, because it's my way of giving back. Everyone has their own thing, you know. Some people do other stuff. But for me, it's teaching and coaching and really being able to instill in them the values and lessons and skills that I learned and things that I know for 100% certain help me right now until this day. Because it's easy to get caught up in life. It's easy to get down. But having a mental tough game, being mentally tough, it takes a different level. It takes a different level to boost yourself up. And I hyped the girls up. I was the number one hype woman. Just really, no matter what the mistake is, no matter what we did or didn't do. Like, I just really hyped them up and pumped them up. And that's how life is. Like, you make mistakes. You do stuff wrong. You make bad decisions. But how do you overcome that? How do you change it?
How do you recover?
How do you recover? It's not about the mistake. It's how you recover. And this is a quote that I told them, and we're going to wrap this coaching part up. But the quote is, and I learned it from one of my basketball coaches. I forgot who it's from. And it's not a John Wooden quote. But the quote says, everyone faces adversity. It's how you overcome it that counts. And it's 100% true. You are going to face adversity. And I think that's one thing.
Guaranteed.
Is, now, that's a guarantee you will face adversity. And I think that's one of the things I love about being an athlete. Like, you face many adversities as an athlete. But how are you going to overcome those things? And some people don't really face adversity for the first time until they're off in college. Or they're away from their parents. Or they, you know, just entering the workforce. Or they go into the military. And they face this adversity. And they don't really have the problem-solving skills or critical thinking ability to make a decision, to understand what's going on, to, you know, reason and rationale. So they may not come out as good as they could have, you know. But being an athlete, especially basketball, is my heart. Like, basketball is my favorite sport. I love it. So when you're on the court and you're facing adversity, something's not going the way you thought it would, or you are coming from behind, like, in that moment, you have to make a split-second decision, and you want it to be the best decision to go in your favor, you know, for your team. So it's like you making these on-the-spur decisions. You have to reason and rationale within moments, like seconds. And it can make the difference between the defense being on you and the defense not. And just being smarter, playing smarter, coaching smarter can be the difference between you winning and you not winning. So all these skills and concepts transfer over to life. And that's what I'm about as a coach. We'll be back after this break.
This ad is brought to you by Tecmo Learning Center, where we aim to prepare future leaders in delivering high-quality skills for students from diverse backgrounds. We provide an extensive after-school program that is technology-based, centered for youth ages 7 to 17 years old. We offer specialized courses in robotics, coding, graphics and design, and much more. If you live in the Somerville, South Carolina, or surrounding areas, please visit our website at techmolearning.org to learn more.
What kind of coach do you think I am? Like, what would you say about me as a coach? I'm nervous.
She's mean, y'all.
No, I'm not. I'm not mean.
She's stern. She's direct. And she's consistent as a person and as a coach. The kids know what to expect from her. For the people that encountered her for the first time, there was an adjustment period because they hadn't come across anybody like her. And, you know, that's unfortunate. But being that they did have her, I think they've learned a lot. And I think it's going to be hard for them to place themselves under a different kind of leadership because she didn't treat them like kids. She treated them very much like adults. She gave them a bit of authority and responsibility. So, you know, I was always told to be aware when someone gives you responsibility without authority. And I believe she gave them a good balance of that, and she empowered them to not only be in control of their basketball season, but also to be in charge of themselves.
Yeah. And I'm going to end with this. I know I said I was going to end it a little while ago. But just being a whole, like, being good all the way around. So I'm very proud of this. Above the championships and everything that they accomplished, they maintained a team GPA of 3.7. Like, that's crazy. Not only is it crazy, but for the season low that they had, like, the turnaround time, you know what I'm saying? Because It's not like a normal district where you go drive 20 minutes away and you're at the school. Like, no, we took two long hauls, and each long haul was what? One was 8 hours one way, and one was 12 hours one way. And this is on a bus.
They were both 12 hours because the first one, it snowed.
Oh, no. Wait, I don't know. Either way, oh, and we actually flew to Okinawa, so that wasn't a long haul per se, but it was still a good bit of traveling to the airport, you know, stuff like that. So even with the load, the demands, the physical demand, and everything else, they kept it together, and they all maintained really good GPAs. I think everyone maintained at least a 3.0 or higher. So one of the seniors who had never played before, she had the highest GPA. And it was just amazing to see it all come together from beginning to end. And it was a great experience for me. But that took up the bulk of my time because basketball season started, volleyball season ended in October, mid-October, right?
Yes.
Mid-end October. And then volleyball started the beginning of, basketball started at the beginning of November. So it went from one thing to the next. And then I had 1 week between basketball and track. So I'm currently still in season for track and
boys,
wrapping it up.
Boys and girls.
Boys and girls. I'm coaching that as well. I can't say that I will be doing this again as far as three seasons in a row, because I'm big on balance. I'm big on taking care of yourself and making sure you're taking care of home base. You know what I'm saying? And like I said, we as a couple, we've been going through changes. And you know, as like I said, you moved here going on a year ago. And so that balance has been like a constant thing trying to find, but I think we do a good job.
Absolutely.
I think we do a good job. And I think I do a good job of separating. So, you know, sometimes it's like, all right. But I think I do a good job of separating from the two, from work, coaching, and then, you know, home life. And then finding that balance to where we still have time for each other and the things we want to do and the things we like to do.
Yeah. And I mean, having that time for one another to recharge, replenish, rebuild is very important. Like she says, working, dealing with so many people that need your time and attention can really be taxing. It could really drain you. So the time that we spend and pour into one another to edify and build one another is very, 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 very important.
Very important. Like, so important. Sometimes it's like it just, I can see the difference it makes, you know what I mean? And I need the recharge, you need the recharge, and so we have to step away sometimes. And it's not always something big.
No, it could be going to the park, walking around, taking pictures. We're very simple.
Very simple.
So we might get on the train because transportation here is so great. Awesome. And each train stop could be a different world. If you remember in the last episode that we did, we talked about how you can get to this place and that place. So we might just jump on the train, and if we see something that's interesting, we'll jump off and go explore. We found batting cages and go-karts.
Yes, that's a good transition right there, because we did discover and find a lot of new things. We took time to actually explore the city we live in. And I don't know, it's just been fun, like getting away from it all but not going too crazy. So just let's give an update. Okay. An update on living my best life in Japan, because that was the last episode.
Right. 9.
If you haven't listened, go listen to episode 9, living my best life in Japan. And so we've just made some discoveries. I think we're foodies. Are we foodies?
I think we're foodies.
We're definitely foodies. So we love food is good.
And we're not scared to try new things. I think we all have that friend back home that will order chicken fingers and fries everywhere they go.
Everywhere.
They may change their dipping sauce You know, they may go from barbecue to honey mustard, and that's the thrill of their lives. Like, no. There's so much out there. And if that's you, you know, no slight, you know. If you know your lane, cool. But there's so much more out there. There's so much to try. There's so many. I mean, it's just vast. So when we see it, we'll try it. If we don't like it, you don't have to try it again. But we definitely give everything a try. Has there any, what's been like a favorite thing that favorite that we recently discovered? Because, I mean, we've done Yakuniku, the
grill meat.
Yep. Where you cook your own meat on the grill. We've done
Yakitori.
Yep, Yakitori, which is basically grilled chicken on a stick. And you can get it plain, like just they simple have, with salt on it, or like dunked in this sauce. And they put it in the sauce, throw it back on the grill, and dip it in the sauce again.
What's the vegetables on it? It's onions?
Onions, yep. Yep.
Onions. But what kind of onions? Not like regular onions.
They're like green onion.
Green onions,
yeah. Like green onions.
I like the onions.
Yes.
You can get all kind of yakitori too. And it comes with, they have different, some of it is like meatballs.
Yes.
Some of it is teriyaki. They just have different flavors. This, I don't know. What else do we like? The gyoza place in Machida.
Oh man, they done switched up the gyoza game, or we call it pot stickers back home. They done switched it up. They started deep frying them.
Deep fry, like, oh my gosh.
Like, what?
It's
and so
amazing.
Crispy and crunchy on the outside, and of course the filling is good and flavorful on the inside. I mean,
it's really good, and I like the sauce on it. It's like sweet chilies.
Yeah, something. like a Thai chili sauce. For those of you that enjoy your Asian cuisine, hey, tell them about our bakery.
The bakery is really good.
Very.
Very good. Like, the bakeries here are different though.
Because the Japanese like soft breads.
The bread here alone will have you just off your game if you're on a diet. I'm not necessarily on a diet per se. I am trying to watch what I eat. But this bakery has, it's a small bakery by comparison, I think. Yes. But they have a lot of good stuff. We low key just took a break to eat some stuff from the bakery.
So, I mean, first and foremost, everything in Japan, like, it's really hard to buy stuff like in bulk.
Yeah.
So when you go to a bakery, things are already portion sized out, like cupcake size, you know. So you don't feel bad for, you know, eating a brownie or a, you know, a cupcake. Now you get upwards of six or seven, you know, you might want to feel bad about yourself if you do that in one sitting. But we're not there, so we don't feel bad.
Don't feel bad at all. Not at all. So we have a few items that we always get from there. But the items we usually get are the sweets. But they do have savory. So you will learn quick the difference between sweet and savory stuff when you come to Japan. Because some stuff you think that might be sweet is actually savory. And then some things that you might think are savory are actually sweet. So you have to kind of just know what you're looking at, really.
Like the curry, like savory would be like the curry bun.
Yeah. So like, it's really soft bread, but what's the outside?
Imagine like a Hawaiian roll, right? With curry on the inside, but like they deep fry it. So the outside's got like a little bit of a crisp to it. The bread is sweet, but it's soft at the same time. But then you got like meat and gravy on the inside.
Yeah. I think they call it curry pon. I don't know, but it is good. That's one of my favorite savory bakery items.
Yes.
And then they have like other stuff with, what is that fish? The one we had? Something with fish on it?
Yes, they had like a little fish taco, something with tartar sauce, like already baked onto it, but it was in a bread. I mean, they get really creative with it, and because we don't read Japanese, we can't give you the exact names of it.
Yeah.
It's just one of those things that you have to go see and go experience. Where basically they're coming up with their own thing. experimenting, and that's just the fun part of it.
Yeah, we just go in there and pick some stuff like, oh, you want to try that? Yeah, you want to try that? And then we just get two of everything.
Because food over here, people specialize in what they specialize in. So if you go into a bakery, it's just going to be baked goods. If you go to a ramen shop, it's just going to be ramen shop. It's not like going to, say, like, Hardee's got real out of control with it. Where you have burgers, Southwest fried chicken, and, you know, just things from all over the board. Done, you know, okay, but not great at one thing. Here, each place, it's their specialty. And when I say they're proud, they're proud. Like, you'll see the picture of the great-grandfather, you know, with his arms folded and chest stuck out, you know, on the wall. Like, hey, this is what we do. This is our family recipe, and this is how we do it.
Yeah, this is definitely true. They stick to what they know. Like, whatever restaurant it is, that's what it is. Nothing crazy or outrageous. So, yeah, I do like that because there's a lot of variety here if you think about it.
Yes, and we spoke about it earlier. We went out and explored our area, our part of town, Yamato City. And when we went out during the daytime, there were a lot of places that were closed. And we were like, We went back out at a later time because one of the main train transfer stations is here in Yamato. So we got out, we walked around, and the restaurants and things that were closed were open. And so there are a lot of restaurants that only open up for a certain amount of time during the day. And I found out that a big part of that is because they do prep their food daily.
Yes.
So things like soups, broths, some places make their own noodles. And I'm speaking specifically about ramen. They do that stuff on a daily basis. And they start in the wee hours of the morning. And with the total prep time, things aren't ready to be put together and to be served until later in the evening. So they'll open up and they'll serve until they run out of food. Once the food is done, they close down and they wake up and do it again the next day.
You know, I didn't really think about it, but maybe that's why a lot of places don't open until 10. I literally didn't think about it until like just right now.
Yeah, man.
Interesting. Good stuff. So yeah, we've just been experiencing, exploring, and discovering all types of things. I think one of our best discoveries would be Big Bang.
Big Bang.
Big Bang. What is it called? Big Bang Circuit?
I think
it's called Big Bang Circuit. So basically, it's like a sports center activity place.
Like a small amusement park type deal.
Yeah, but all indoors.
Yes, it's got it's not normal go-kart racing because it's got a slick floor and it's meant for drifting.
It's definitely meant
which
for
we
drifting.
Learned after watching some experts.
After we already did it.
Yes, when we did it, it was like we were playing Mario Kart and there were banana peels everywhere.
Yeah, just slide. So we ran into each other for like the first two laps.
For the younger people that may be listening that don't know about Mario Kart. So whenever you hit a banana peel, your cart spins out of control. You have to regain control. Sometimes you end up going in the wrong direction. Mm-hmm. And you line back up and finish out your race. But yes, it was very...
It was funny at first.
It was very funny. And if anyone knows the two of us, we're very, very competitive. So... She'll tell you I didn't win the first two.
You cheated.
Because we did crash in the first curve, but after that...
You cut me off twice in the start of both races, and that's what put you ahead.
So everyone knows that when you are racing, you take the inside of the curve because it's a shorter distance. So that was my strategy in beating her.
No, that wasn't a strategy because we were lined up.
It was my strategy.
No, it wasn't.
And how I was going to do it. Goodness. Even when we got... even when she passed me, the way that I regained my control was trying to take the inside edge.
But no. Now,
I did hit the wall trying to do it a few times. I spun out a few times. But when I actually did get it is when I took over the race. And she's
that's not how it happened. Because the way we were lined up, I was already on the outside and you were already on the inside. And then when we went, you just stayed on the inside.
That explains.
And we didn't know how to drive it.
That explains. Cheater. That explains cheater. The first curve.
But cheater, after cheater, that, fucking eater. Nope, you cut me off. Because, in the beginning of both times.
Because I took the inside. That is the strategy. I've done go-kart racing before.
All that matters is I beat you the last one. And I lapped you.
My record is, she didn't lap me.
Yes,
the record,
I did.
The record is 2-1.
I did too lap you because you got stuck. And they had to come move you. So if you get stuck like against the wall, I guess. Like it's no reverse. So they have to come move your car. You got stuck. And I won. I did lap you. Yes, I did. See. You don't play fair.
I went by the board.
You don't play fair.
You didn't even realize the board was keeping up with our laps.
Yes, I did. By the time we did that one, I did realize it. Anyways, we found Big Bang and it was nice. It was funny. I want to learn how to actually drift though. Remember that one guy who had the good car? They gave us the busted cars.
Look, this guy had to be like 56 years old out here on this little circuit court. And when I say, he literally drifted like the entire thing. I mean, the car looked like it was sliding sideways
the entire time.
Definitely above our expertise. But this place also has darts, karaoke.
Pool.
A huge billiards hall. So, you know, if you're on the big boy stuff, you like doing trick shots, eight ball, nine ball, you can do it all up there. And then there's also a batting cage.
Oh, and ping pong.
Ping pong is pretty big over here. Like, yeah. They're pretty serious about it. They got ping pong gloves and everybody carries their own equipment and everything like that. But the batting cage, definitely a new experience. I've done a batting cage before, but first time in my adult life, and it was pretty good.
Yes, I definitely love the batting cages. I played softball, but I haven't played in quite some time. I can't think of the last time I actually played softball or swung a bat or anything. So it was nice. It was good. It was kind of like muscle memory too. And I had to actually switch from batting with my right hand to batting with my left hand because I was having some technical difficulties and I was slicing my arm up for some reason. So I had to switch it up and it wasn't that bad. It really wasn't that bad.
And what was hilarious, so we went to this one booth where the speed was set, it's slower. We're talking, 60, 70 miles an hour. So I got, a little bowl, and I went down to one that was, jacked up a little bit, and it was like 90 mile an hour fastballs. And apparently I didn't know that these machines had the capability of throwing curveballs as well, because this thing was set at random. So I would have pitches on all corners of the plate, and when I say I looked horrible, I don't know if anybody there was watching me, paying attention to me, because people were doing their own thing, trying to hit their own ball. Yes.
But I thought you did good. Like, I thought you were doing well with the faster balls. Better than I would have been. That's why I didn't even attempt to go over there. Mm-mm.
But shout out to those people that play baseball. That little ball going that fast. A lot more respect for the sport. Especially with it coming out of someone's hand instead of a machine that's only going to give you a certain amount of variation.
I know.
For it to come out of somebody's hand and go where it's supposed to go all the time and, not get hit.
Yeah.
it's pretty amazing. I got a lot more respect for the sport.
And it was a good stress reliever, too. Like, it was fun, good stress reliever, but then we started getting competitive. But it was still fun.
And luckily we ran out of yen before either of us, like, hurt a shoulder or and walked away sore.
Yes. Yes, we did. Yes. We'll be back after this break. So you've been here, as we mentioned, almost a year now. Do you still love living and being in Japan?
Absolutely. It's been everything that I've seen and that I expressed before. And I really just, I enjoy it being so peaceful. That has been the absolute highlight of it all. Being someone that's sensitive to other people's aura, it's been a very, 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 very great experience being around people that seem to be, because you don't know anybody's personal lives, but seem to be very centered and grounded. It's been just relieving, especially coming from the environment that I came from, working in the airport and dealing with customer service.
Yeah, I think that's one of the biggest things I like here is the customer service. And I know we already talked about our likes and dislikes in the last episode, but did you have any updates to those likes or dislikes?
Not for me personally. Not much has changed on that end, and I feel like I'm still exploring. How about you?
I don't really have any updates per se. Just really like elaborate on the dislikes that I already talked about. So we talked about parking. So actually I do have an update on a dislike, because no place is 100% perfect, you know what I'm saying? And I want to give both sides, like, not like, oh, my life is so great in Japan, I love it, it's nothing absolutely wrong, it's just amazing 100%, you know what I'm saying? Like, I want to give both sides of it and be realistic and not like hunting down things to dislike. But it just comes, I think, with the longer you stay in a place, the more experiences and encounters you have a different understanding, or things may present itself that it might not have originally or initially. So for me, that update would be the passive aggressiveness. Like, the Japanese people are very passive, or okay, can be very passive aggressive about stuff, and I'll expand on that in just a few. But then my other dislike is, I would say, I don't really know how to properly word it, because I don't want people to think it's the same thing as what we experience in the States. But I'll just give you the scenario. So, in our apartment building, in the front, there's like these two unofficial parking spaces that people park in. And it's no sign. There never has been a sign that says don't park here. And if you've ever been to Japan or you know anything about it, people really do just park in like random absurd places, like, or they'll just stop in the street and put their hazard lights on. But this is not one of those places, because it's off the main road and it's just the road to our apartment building. It's kind of hard to describe, but the point of me saying that is this: I parked there at, like, ever since I've been here, going on 3 years, and I parked there ever since I've been here, and it was never an issue, never a problem, until recently. They have been doing construction on the building, and so I park there like I would. Like, I don't park there every single day. It's just like, okay, if I come in late and have to get up early in the morning, I'm just gonna park right here so I can just come down, get in the car, go, that type deal. So I parked there one night, and then the next morning, there was a ticket. I got a ticket. Now, it's in all Japanese, so I didn't know if it was a warning ticket or if, like, it was an actual I'm fine ticket. Needless to say, it was an actual ticket where I'm being fined. Okay, cool. I get it. But there was no sign. There was no nothing. Just nothing that said I couldn't be here, right? Well, lo and behold, people still park in these parking spaces and they don't get a ticket, because it's the same cars over and over and over, cars that I've seen parked there prior to me getting a ticket. And I know they parked there overnight. And so it made me furious because I feel like I'm targeted because I'm a foreigner. And I feel like that's why I got the ticket. And yes, they do know that you are foreign because foreigners have a Y plate. It's really hard to explain the different plates.
On the license tags for Americans that are here, you have three letters. You either have an A, an E, or a Y in the bottom left-hand corner of the license tag. Most Japanese citizens or private citizens have Japanese characters on their license plate, where we would have the Y, the A, or the E. So it's very easy to distinguish someone that's not from here based on the license tag that's on their vehicle.
Right. And so I feel like because I have a Y plate, it's like, even though I live in the building, like, that's why I got the ticket. So that kind of like upset me because they do have a thing about foreigners, not necessarily specifically like because I'm black, but they just have a thing with foreigners. And it also has to do with, usually the Y plates are related to the military base. And they have a protest like every Wednesday. They have a protest every Wednesday because and it's mainly older Japanese citizens that have lived through a different time period. They don't want the bases here any longer. But it's kind of like one of those things where if you know anything about the current state of, foreign relations, it is more beneficial for us to be here and connected, because I don't think Japan has an official actual military. Don't quote me on that.
Yeah, I would have to look that up.
But like, it's something along those lines. And so should something pop off, we kind of like have this agreement like, oh, we're here to help you type thing. But so that's my biggest thing. And I spoke on, my car accident that I had here and how, where the liability works for us, etc. So that would be my update, is basically how I felt about that parking ticket. Just the whole idea of foreigners not wanted here sometimes, or being targeted in that type of manner. It's just not okay. Like, I don't like it. But I can't say 100% that's why I got the ticket. You know what I'm saying? Like, but other cars... But still parked there.
Right now, it's the only rational.
Yeah,
line of thought.
So back to the passive aggressiveness. I don't know. Let's say we're asking a question about something, and they'll tell you to hold on, like they're gonna check on it when they know the answer is no, but they're gonna tell you to hold on and wait, or let me see, or something like that, just to tell you no, versus just being like no up front. So it's like it's just a real passive aggressive nature. And it's not everyone, it's not all the time or anything like that, but I have experienced it and encountered it. And I've wasted more time with the passive aggressiveness than, like, how can I explain it? I feel like I'm doing a horrible job right now. So when I went to do the shirts, and most of my experiences have been with Japanese people, like the passive aggressiveness has been with people affiliated with the base, mm-hmm. Not like people on the economy.
Right. So they don't do overtime.
Yeah, here. They do not do overtime. If they close at 6 o'clock,
they are locking the doors at 6 o'clock.
Like, no, they are locking the doors, turning the lights off, and leaving at 6 o'clock. And so a lot of that has to do with the Japanese contracts and stuff like that. But I go in like 15 minutes before this place closes. And I'm not trying to actually do anything. The only thing I'm trying to do is place the order, which means I just fill out a paper, put the order in, and I pay for it. They're not actually going to do anything right there in that moment. You know, it's just getting on paper saying that this person wants this, right? Cool. So I get there. Was it 15 minutes or 10 minutes? It had to be 10 minutes. Let me tell you why I know it's 10 minutes. So I know it was 10 minutes because I go in there and I'm asking him to place an order. And he's like, oh no, closing. I'm like, but you have 10 minutes. Because he was being passive aggressive about it, like, instead of just saying, we shut everything down, I can't take your order, come back tomorrow. We go back and forth for like 5 minutes before he even actually tries to help me. And I'm like, dude, this could have been done 5 minutes ago. I knew exactly what I needed. I knew exactly what I wanted. I knew exactly how much it cost. All I have to do is write down the information on the paper and you take the payment, like, period. What ends up happening is he writes down the information and I paid when I came back to pick up the order because he had already turned the computers and stuff off. And I'm like, yo, was all of this really necessary? Like, I was just so I was more upset about wasting time because he was being passive aggressive about it. Then I would have just rather him told me everything shut down. You have to place your order tomorrow.
So there are a couple of things that you got to understand. And I've learned in my time here, the Japanese are one by the book. They follow the rules to the letter. Secondly, they are very literal in their translation. So there are some things where we find gray areas, but because they follow the rules to a T and because they are so literal to the translation, even in their own language, things are very rigid. So it makes things very difficult at times in trying to come to an understanding on what it is that you want and what you need, or just simply being on the same page.
So do you think the passive aggressiveness has to do with the language barrier?
I think a part of it is because when, you know, they translate some things, someone wanted me, they were trying to tell me to go to another building, but the translation was, go away now. And so to me, that's very rude, like as if you're rushing, you're rushing me off. But what he meant was, go to where you need to go now.
Yes. That happened to me the other day. I was asking, I think the place had closed, but it was two exits. And I was asking if I should go out of the first, like the front exit. And he was like, yes, please go. like, yes, please go, get out. Like, no, that's not what he was saying. He was just trying to tell me, yes, please go through that exit. But it didn't really pan out that way. So, I mean, I can see what you're saying. The language barrier or the translation differences could have something to do with it. The other thing is, I think it depends on where they learned English. You know what I'm saying? Like, or where and how they learned English. Like, if they learned English from a native speaker, then they would have a different understanding.
Yeah, if they pick up all the idiosyncrasies and the colloquialisms. I get to use all these SAT words that, you know, that we have, because our language is anything but literal. We have so many connotations to, yes, to words that clearly have a definition, but we use them in so many different ways and so much slang and
but so even on, like, so I think of, how can I, not necessarily dialect, but cultural thing. Like that, and that's what I try to tell people, especially when in regards to like trying to translate or help someone understand something. So like, for example, if I ask you, oh, are you gonna put on clothes or are you gonna put on clothes? Like, you know the difference between the two, even though all I did was repeat the word twice. But that's like, how do I translate that to a Japanese person? How would I get them to understand that clothes is just like, oh, regular everyday clothes, and clothes can mean like business casual or dress up clothes. And that basically, whenever you repeat a word twice, it just indicates, like, I don't know.
In the next level.
Right.
of whatever it is that you are talking about.
Like, are you going to sleep? Or are you going to sleep? Like,
so like, are you going to take a nap? Or are you about to do your whole 8 hours?
Right. Exactly. So, like, it's hard to explain that difference, or it's hard to explain that when you just, it's understood. There you go. That's what I was trying to say. A lot of things we just understand between one another because of how we talk and the culture and nature of the things we talk about. So it's plenty of examples like that we can go on and on and on about. But yeah, so those are my updates with living in Japan and still loving it. So I think we're pretty much on the same page. We still loving it, still enjoying it, and enjoying being here with one another. Now, one thing that must go is this weather. The weather, we talked about in the last episode, but even still now.
The weatherman is always lying.
He's so wrong.
Well, I can't tell you if it was Friday or Saturday, but it was Saturday. We experienced all four seasons
in one day.
Literally, it was 75 degrees and sunny outside. Beautiful day. Then it rained. It was cool. It dropped down to about 50 something. Then it started thundering and lightning. Oh, was hail.
It was hail. Like, for real hell.
Like, after that, I mean, it was cold. It was like 40 something. I'm like, all in one day. And, you know, the weatherman said nothing about rain.
Definitely didn't say anything about hail.
About hail, no, nothing. So, you know, we got on shorts and t-shirt, and I got on some Nike slides. Yeah.
And I mean, I didn't honestly think at this point in the year that it would get cold enough to actually hail, but it did.
And what's even crazier is, I mean, still, it's May now. When it rains and it's been getting cooler, it's been in the 40-somethings where we are, it still lands as snow in the mountains. So all these last few months, whenever it rains, you look off in the horizon, see the mountain ranges, the mountains become snow-capped. So, yeah, this weather is very unpredictable, and I see why people carry, you know, book bags, hiking bags, basically, because they gotta be fully equipped.
Yes.
with rations and all other...
everything.
Because you just never know what you're gonna get.
And it's strange to me. It's just really, really strange, but we will see how that pans out. So I'm ready for beach weather, actually. Every time I turn around, I'm like, ooh, this is good for the beach. Oh, we can buy this for the beach. Oh, look at this bathing suit. I'm ready for summer break, personally. What are our summer break plans?
Well, first and foremost, want to travel. Definitely go out and see more and more and more. The thing about being out of the country and being overseas is that you realize just how small your little corner of the world was and how much world there is to see. And you kind of develop a hunger. Definitely coming to a place like Japan where everything, you know, has been great and the things that, you know, that we say we didn't like are so small in comparison to all the things that we do like, it definitely makes you that much more, how would you say it? Hungry to go
eager
to go and explore the world, not just what's immediately around you, but let's go see more of Asia.
Yeah, just here. Taking those opportunities. And it's definitely cheaper to travel from here to other places nearby. So yeah, I hope we get to go to a place or two
or three
over the summer break. And I think that's the other thing I like about my job. It's intense throughout the year. And I mean, we get every major holiday, with me teaching. And we get extended breaks. So that's one thing I really like about it, because it really gives me time to enjoy other things and do some things that I might not be able to do if I were in another profession. So that's the summer plans. How do you think 2019 is going, and how is it shaping up? What's to come?
2019 is going fast as hell.
It's going so fast.
It is May.
It's May.
It's May.
Wow.
But so far, so good. It's been action-packed. It's been full of blessings. It's been just a fulfilling. A very fulfilling year so far. A lot of things, you know, everybody's now screaming, oh, we gotta get to the bag, gotta get to the bag. There's been a lot of things that we have done that just feed your soul. I think is the best way to put it.
Soul food.
Yeah, it just feeds your soul. You know that you've done well, you've done right by somebody, and that they're gonna be better because of it. I mean, that is the epitome of, you know, why people should live their lives.
Yes. I think for me, 2019 is definitely scooting on by. I missed 3 of the first 5 months. I just don't know where it's gone. I've completely missed April. Like, by the time I realized it was April, it was like April 27th. Like, literally. It was May. But yeah, for me, 2019 has been just fulfilling. Like you said, fulfilling is a really good word. And I don't know what else to say about 2019. It's going so fast, and I've been through a lot of changes. And just trying to keep my head above water. I mean, because on top of coaching and everything, just maintaining at my actual job, like, and making sure I'm doing everything I need to there, and finding that balance between work and home. It's been interesting.
And the gym.
Yeah, the gym. I'm getting back into the gym life. And that's the other thing I kind of don't like about being so busy. Is because I have to choose between so many different things. And when it comes down to, like, the basic necessities, so eat, sleep, work out, right? I'm gonna choose sleep every time. Like, sleep conquers all in my world. So really trying to overcome that and combat that. Like, okay, I have to have a balance. I have to have sleep, definitely. But I need to do some of these other things too. Definitely need to eat. But if one of those things have to be sacrificed at any given time, it would be all those other things. And gym has definitely been last on the list for quite a while.
Not me.
But, anyways.
We gonna eat.
I mean, I know we gonna eat. That's why I feel more comfortable going to sleep, because I know when I wake up, we gonna eat. So, I don't know. It's just, it's been a whirlwind, kind of. It does need to slow down. It's going to be my birthday before you know it. It really is. So, it is almost my birthday.
Everybody, to all the party people on Dark Cloud Podcast, I want y'all to understand how absurd this birthday celebration has gotten. It went from celebrating the week of her birthday to celebrating the month of her birthday to celebrating the month before the month of her birthday. And because, little known fact about both of us, we're both premature babies, she also celebrates her due date.
Because so, I feel like my due date is significant. Like, I was born 2 months before the due date. So I feel like, oh, wow, let me still celebrate the due date. People argue, well, if that's the case, a lot of people should celebrate. Okay, celebrate it. I don't care. It's not mine. I'm celebrating September 8th because that is my due date. That's the day I was supposed to be born. But I was just so eager to enter the world.
Somebody came 2 months early.
So I celebrate July, and I celebrate
unsportsmanlike conduct for September excessive celebration. Unsportsmanlike conduct for excessive celebration. Throw the flag.
That is very significant.
Baby, I'm glad you're here.
I mean, me too.
I celebrate the day that you came into the world, but all that, all the other stuff, you know.
No, it's important to me. You just celebrate your whole birthday month if you want to.
Remember that.
Turn up. turn up. No, but I don't know. It's May. It's only 2 more months until my birthday. Like, that's crazy. Usually my birthday takes forever to come.
But time flies when you're having fun.
Time does fly when you're having fun. It does. I wonder what we're going to do this year for my birthday. I don't know. Hopefully something fun and exciting.
We shall see.
We shall. So that's really all we had to catch up on. I know that was a lot. Take what you wish. Take what you want. And go from there. But the last thing I wanted to talk about before we get out of here is the episode title. Episode 10 entitled Habari Ghani. So why is it entitled Habari Ghani?
Well, because we've been gone and trying to figure out what's going on. For those of you that aren't familiar with Kwanzaa, it's 7 days. So at the beginning of each day, you're greeted with Habari Ghani. It's Swahili for what's the news or what's happening, what's going on.
What's up?
So we just wanted to let you guys know what's been going on in the time that we've been away from you and just fill you in.
Right. I mean, it's really and truly, it's so much more than what we actually talked about. I mean, I'm just not one to talk about like entertainment and like all of that stuff, you know what I'm saying?
Right, right.
Because we didn't even mention like any of the movies or anything we went to see. Because we went to see a lot of movies.
No, and that's a new tradition that we started. We go to the movies every weekend now.
Every Sunday.
So that's one of our scheduled, you know, times to have some QT, some quality time.
Yeah. And then we usually eat before or after, depending on what time we go to the movie. But yeah, like, I mean, even outside of like entertainment, like movie wise, but just so much has been going on in the world from October to May. Man, it's just been so much. Some good, some bad, some tragic, you know. And I see a lot of right now is graduation season, you know what I'm saying? Why can't I talk? Graduation season. So a lot of congratulations going out there to all the grads, no matter what level you on, kindergarten, you know, high school, college, wherever you may be. A lot of congrats. A lot of people getting married, having babies, you know, starting businesses. Yeah. Just so it's a lot of stuff going that has happened from October to May. Like, it's just no way to cover that much ground. And I actually, like, started a few episodes since then and just didn't really follow through on them because I wasn't certain about them. But I'm certain about this one. I had to make sure that I still knew how to work this thing. Feel me?
Yeah, it's been a little minute.
But it's good to be back, and we'll be bringing you more content in the near future. I have a good series that's going to be coming out that I'm working on diligently. And once I have more time, I'll be devoting more time to that. So be on the lookout for the next series from Dark Cloud Podcast.
Be sure to check us out on Instagram at darkcloud.podcast, on Twitter at _DC Podcast, and on Facebook, Dark Cloud Podcast. Be sure to give us some feedback. Let us know if there's something that you'd like to hear from us. Like, share, comment, subscribe. Again, my name is Apollo.
And I'm DL Hayes. Thank you for listening to Dark Cloud Podcast.